Welcome to Watchmen on the Wall, a daily outreach of Southwest Radio Ministries and SWRC.com. Today, we get ready to tell the United States happy birthday with historian and author Bill Federer. Watchmen on the Wall is here each day to bring clarity to the chaos and remind everyone who tunes in that God is still on the throne and prayer changes things. Don't miss out on any of the important topics and information that's shared on Watchmen on the Wall. Make sure you subscribe to our free email newsletter. The latest insight and analysis from our speakers and access to our latest resources. Sign up today for the free email newsletter. Visit swrc.com or give us a call, 1-800-652-1144. Friends, your support is vital to Southwest Radio Ministries mission, empowering us to spread the message of the gospel and bring eternal hope to those in need. Your gift today will allow us to be here for you tomorrow. Please, give right now. Simply call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. You can also give your gift on our website, swrc.com. Every gift matters. 1-800-652-1144. Now, let's join today's host, Josh Davis.
Psalm 33, verse 12 reminds us, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." And we're familiar with the popular song, "God Bless America." But my prayer is that America would once more bless God, that this nation, in spite of all the violence and the threats and everything that we see happening from sea to shining sea, that we would see America turn to God, helping us to understand where we came from and where we need to go. As someone who is no stranger to the Watchmen on the Wall family, as Christian historian and author, Bill Federer, thank you so much for joining us on Watchmen on the Wall again, Bill.
Hey, Josh, great to be with you.
We want to explore America's Christian heritage, and there's none better than you. All the research that you have put into this over the years and traveling and speaking all across this nation about our Christian heritage. Can you explain some of that? You know, there's such an attack against that that continues up to this present day, and people need to really understand where this nation came from so that we can understand what we need to do to recover what has been lost. We just give you the floor and allow you to share the history, the heritage of America as we are celebrating our independence tomorrow for the 4th of July, as we remember the Christian heritage of the United States of America.
Well, the colonies have each their own history. Virginia was Anglican, Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island was Baptist, New York was Dutch Reformed, Delaware and New Jersey were originally Swedish Lutheran, and Maryland Catholic, Pennsylvania Quaker. They didn't get along, and then when the Revolution started, they all had to work together against the king. After the Revolution, their attitude changed to, "We may not always agree on religion, but you are willing to fight and die for my freedom. I need to let you practice your faith." And so they began to tolerate each other, first state by state. First, it was Protestant. In 1776, 98% of the country was Protestant out of 3 million people. 1% Catholic, only 30,000 Catholics out of 3 million. Catholics were originally only allowed in Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. And then 0.1% Jewish. There were only 7 synagogues in the entire nation. And I read through every state constitution. 9 of the original 13 state constitutions required officeholders to be Protestant Christians. 3, all you had to do was be a plain Christian. Then there's an Irish potato famine, early 1800s. Millions of Irish Catholics come to America. The Catholic percentage goes from 1% to 20%. Then there's the persecution of Jews in Bavaria. 250,000 come across. They go from 0.1% to 1%. Anyway, the tolerance began to eventually go out to tolerate people that are against Christianity, sort of an ironic thing, but that's another talk. But as far as the founding goes, the French and Indian War, the French were stirring up the Indians to fight the British colonies. And that's, of course, when George Washington, as a young colonel with the British, has 2 horses shot out from under him and 4 bullet holes through his coat at the Battle of Monongahela, and he survives. And then you have the British blockading Boston's harbor. And Thomas Jefferson, as a legislator in Virginia, proposes a day of fasting and prayer, and it passes. George Washington wrote in his diary, June 1st, 1774, went to church, fasted all day. But the royal governor of Virginia considered this a veiled protest against the king because it was the king's navy that was doing the blockading of the Boston Harbor. And so the governor of Virginia disbands the House of Burgesses. And the legislators, instead of going home, they go down the street to Raleigh Tavern, and in the back room, they plot to have a Continental Congress. And they have the First Continental Congress, and then the second that does the Declaration. And so there's quite a number of battles in the books, Miracles in American History, mm-hmm. that my wife and I put together, that you really can't explain our independence without God. So the British had the most powerful military in the world. The sun never set on the British Empire. They had India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica, and America. We had a 3,000-mile ocean that helped, and there was no gold in North America. We had tobacco and beaver skins, and we were sort of a waste of money from the British point of view. And when we had a century of Europe being the chessboard that they fought over and America being this afterthought, just stay out of my hair, don't cost me any money. But we got a chance to practice self-government. And then when the Bengal over there in India, they had a famine, 10 million people died, and the British East India Company was about to go bankrupt. And the king allowed them to tax, and the people of Britain didn't want to get the taxes. And so they did a government bailout, right? We're familiar with those.
The government allowed
the British East India Company to tax everything that goes to the colonies and then cut out the middlemen. And the people in America didn't like that. So the British began to send their troops over. So a couple of the interesting battles, the New York, you have a Bunker Hill battle in Boston. The British leave, they go to New York. The harbor fills up with 400 British ships, 32,000 British troops. They said that the harbor looked like a forest of trees because there are so many masts of these ships. And George Washington is in charge. They rush a copy of the Declaration of Independence out. He has it read to his troops. But the British have a loyalist. By the way, the Continental Congress has a day of fasting and prayer. I just think this is so overlooked. This is the same Continental Congress that in July 4th has the Declaration. Well, May 17th of 1776, they unanimously pass a day of humiliation, fasting, and prayer that with united hearts, confess and bewail our manifold sins and transgressions, sincere repentance and amendment of life, appease God's righteous displeasure, and through the merits and mediation of Jesus Christ, obtain pardon and forgiveness. They rush this out to George Washington. He has this read to his troops. The Continental Congress, having observed Friday the 17th of May to be observed as a day of fasting and prayer, and he orders his troops to observe it. And anyway, the British, they're in the harbor. They find a loyalist. A loyalist is somebody who lives in America, but they're loyal to the enemy. I know it's hard for us to imagine that type of person ever existed. but this loyalist shows the British where to land, away from where the Americans can see, and march all night long through Jamaica Pass, which is there in New York, and attack George Washington from behind on August 27th of 1776. It is the largest battle of the entire Revolutionary War. 3,000 Americans are killed. They're being shot from behind. Only 300 British die. It's so lopsided. And it looks like, and this is the entire American army. There's no second string. If it's over here, it's over. The sun goes down. Washington is pinned up against the East River. And he looks, probably the thought goes through his mind, you know, the British will win, he'll be hung as a traitor, and America will be another British colony like India. But instead, he gets every boat he can find, and they ferry troops all night long in silence and dark across the East River to Manhattan Island. And then the sun starts to come up, and he's only moved half the army. And his chief of intelligence, Major Ben Talmadge, writes, "As the dawn of the next day approached, those of us who remained in the trenches became very anxious for our own safety. And when the dawn appeared, there were several regiments still on duty. At this time, a very dense fog began to rise off the river and settle in a peculiar manner over both encampments. I recollect this peculiar providential occurrence perfectly well, and so very dense was the atmosphere that it could scarcely discern a man at 6 yards distance. We tarried until the sun had risen, but the fog remained as dense as ever. So Washington continues to evacuate the troops. He's on the last boat that leaves. The fog lifts. The British charge. Nobody's there. It was the last chance the British had to capture the entire American army all at one time. George Washington later writes, "The hand of Providence has been so conspicuous in the course of the war that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith. But it will be time enough for me to turn preacher when my present appointment ceases." Mm. And of course, Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary says, "By providence, it is commonly understood to mean the will of God." So that's one miracle, right? Battle of Brooklyn Heights in the fog. The second is the crossing of the Delaware River on Christmas Day evening of 1776. It's a blizzard. There's a dozen different little miracles inside of this one. Wow. Where the Washington's, three of the Washington's troops couldn't make it across the river because of the ice. One makes it across. It's so cold in the blizzard that a person freezes to death. Then one of his contingents attacks the British, and Washington is upset because he thought it blew the surprise. Well, what he didn't realize is that some loyalist had snitched and told the British that the Americans were coming. And when this little skirmish took place, the British Colonel Rawl thought to himself, well, gee, these Americans can't even plan a decent surprise attack. And so he goes back to the host house he was staying at, and he's playing cards and eating and maybe having a little bit to drink. And somebody rushes in with a note, and the guard wouldn't let him in the house. He says, well, here, please give this note. And they rush in, give the note to this Colonel Rawl, and he reads it and says, the Americans are planning a surprise attack. He goes, yeah, I know all about it. Sticks it in his pocket, and he continues to, you know, play whatever game it was. And so Washington's men march all night long in freezing cold, and they attack. And the Hessians were only trained to fight in a field very efficiently. You know, you've seen those lines, they're all lined up, and one is reloading, and the other's aiming, and the other's shooting, and they have these volleys. Well, the Americans are shooting from behind the trees and behind barns, and then they finally get together, and the Colonel Rawl of the Hessians gets shot, and then the Germans' troops, their mercenaries, don't know what to do, and they surrender. This was a great victory. And then Washington's men go to Princeton, and so Cornwallis hears about this, that 1,000 German Hessians were captured. And so he leaves New York, and he marches down there, and he is going to lay into Washington. And so they're set up against each other, and this is in January 3rd of 1777, across a little creek there in Princeton, New Jersey. And it's late in the day, so they plan on fighting the next day. Well, at night, Washington leaves his campfires burning, a couple guys left in camp to bang pots and pans. He moves his troops all night long in a great big circle to attack the British from behind. And there's a bunch of miracles there. The British normally had guards on every road, but this one night, they decided to move the guards, and so the one road had no guards, and so Washington's able to march down this road. The sun comes up, and Washington's men attack the British from behind. And initially, the British run, but then they stop, and then they fire back, and then Washington's men start to run away. And he's like, I'm not going to lose this surprise. He runs to the front of the lines, and he orders his men to stop running away. He's riding his horse. He tells them to follow him, and he marches within 30 yards of the British. And then he turns, and he faces his men, and he says, ready, aim, fire. And they shoot past Washington at the British, and then the British immediately return the shot. And Washington is in the middle of the field, and the smoke from these muskets is a big cloud. And the one American soldier named Fitzgerald, he says, I pulled my hat over my eyes because I didn't want to see Washington shot. That was the Irishman John Fitzgerald, who was an American. When the smoke clears, Washington was not shot, and he's on his horse, and he's waving his hat, and he's yelling, charge. And so the Americans charge. They capture 800 more of the British. This is a battle of Trenton and the Battle of Princeton. And in these 10 days, the course of the war turns. I mean, again, the British are the most powerful military force on the planet, and we win these two battles. So that's another miracle in American history. There's the Battle of Saratoga, and so the British land 6,000 troops in Canada. They're marching down toward New York, and the Americans are at a disadvantage because the British bribed the Indians to join the British in fighting the Americans. Matter of fact, it's listed as one of the reasons in the Declaration. It says, the king has excited domestic insurrection among us by stirring up the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all races, sexes, and conditions. And so the British went to the Mohawks and says, hey, we'll offer you money for scalps. The Americans would send maybe 30 guys out at nighttime to do reconnaissance. Only three would make it back because the Indians could, you know, see them and kill them. And there's a loyalist named David Jones, and he kisses his fiancee, Jane McCrae, goodbye, and he goes to join the British. And the British are marching down toward Albany, New York, and they're getting close to this guy's town, and he's probably anxious to see his fiancee again. Well, the Indians, they go out in front of the British troops scalping Americans. Well, they can't tell who's an American and who's a British. We all sort of look the same to them, right? Mm-hmm. And they scalp Jane McCrae, this guy's fiance, David Jones's fiance. And then the Indians, their habit was to put the scalps on sticks and lift them up really high and do a scalp dance, you know, whooping and hollering. And so when they go into the British camp, the soldiers see these scalps, and one of them is this nice, long, pretty hair. And David Jones suspects, and sure enough, it was his fiance. And so the British soldiers go to this British general and says, what were you thinking? And so he has to go to the Mohawks and tell them to tone it down. They get offended and leave.
Okay.
And so now you have 6,000 British troops in the middle of the New York force. They don't know where they're at. The Americans gain the advantage, and they win the Battle of Saratoga. 6,000 British troops surrender. That would be a big deal today if some country had 6,000 troops surrender. So that was a miracle in American history. And all through this time, you know, Washington is making statements like, here's one that Valley Forge, to the distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to laud the more distinguished character of Christian. After the Battle of Saratoga, Continental Congress has it, the first national day of Thanksgiving. Right after the Declaration, it says, with one heart, one voice, join penitent confession of their manifold sins, may please God through the merits of Jesus Christ mercifully to forgive and blot them out. Benedict Arnold was going to betray West Point to the British, and he met with a spy, John Andre, and John Andre is dressed as a civilian, and he's marching back to the British. He is about to cross a bridge, and some German Hessian troops come out of the woods. And he says, oh, it's finally good to meet some men on our side. And they say, what do you mean, our side? He says, well, you're Hessians. You're working with the British. And they go, no, we're American troops dressed as Hessians to try to find spies. And he goes, you know what? I sort of suspect you can't trust people nowadays. I just sort of said that. I really didn't mean it. And they go, yeah, we're going to search you. They search him once, twice. They're about to let him go. And then they decide to have him take off his boot. And in the heel of his boot is the map of West Point that Benedict Arnold had given him. Like with the big arrow, attack here, right? And he tries to talk his way out of it. They say, well, explain it to our commander. And they bring him back. And Benedict Arnold flees on a ship called the Vulture. And Washington was going to be visiting West Point the very day it was going to be surrendered. I mean, Benedict Arnold had really turned. But now it stopped. So General Nathaniel Greene writes, treason of the blackest dye was yesterday discovered. General Arnold, who commanded at West Point, was about to give the American cause a deadly wound, if not fatal stab. Happily, the treason had been timely discovered. The providential train of circumstances which led to its discovery affords the most convincing proof that the liberties of America are the object of divine protection. And then the Continental Congress has another day of Thanksgiving. Remarkable interposition of his watchful providence in rescuing the person of our commander-in-chief and the army from imminent dangers at the moment when treason was ripened for execution. And then it ends that we should have a day of thanksgiving for fervent supplications to God of all grace to cause the knowledge of Christianity to spread over all the earth. the same Thanksgiving of thanking God that Washington wasn't captured. They're thanking God that the knowledge of Christianity will spread over all the earth.
Friends, you're listening to Watchmen on the Wall. We are joined by historian Bill Federer, and he's explaining to us the hand of God moving upon the founding of our nation. All the stories that you're hearing and many, many, many others are cataloged for you in two wonderful volumes. It's available at swrc.com and by calling us at 1-800-652-1144. Again, the phone number, 1-800-652-1144, or visit our website, swrc.com. Two wonderful volumes, Miracles in American History, Volumes 1 and Volume 2. Available at swrc.com or by calling 1-800-652-1144. And yes, Bill, we do have some time for some more stories. So why don't you just continue with this wonderful education that you're giving us?
Yeah, and I encourage people to get the books because kids love them. Mm. They're short chapters, maybe 5-6 pages per chapter, and they're all positive and they're all God moves. And one dad was like reading one to his son every night. And you know, okay, after he finished the books, you know, the son's like, aren't you going to read from that book again? And, but one of them is the Battle of Cow Pens. Like you put some cows in a pen. Yeah. It's in South Carolina. And it's the battle scene that was in the movie Patriot with Mel Gibson. The British are chasing the Americans. And the American general, Daniel Morgan, can't outrun them. And so he decides to fight, but he chooses where, and it's in front of a river, which is a foolish thing from the British point of view, because you never fight a battle in front of a river, because if you're losing, it makes it really hard to run away. Yes. But he did it on purpose to lure the British, and he had two kinds of soldiers. One were the militia. These are guys right off the farm. They're sharpshooters, but after a couple of shots, they run away. And then behind them, he had the Continental soldiers who had been in lots of battles, and they won't run away. And so he sets them up with the militia in front. So the British are charging. They see these militia. They say, oh, those guys are so unorganized. And they see the river behind them and they go, what fools. They're at a full gallop and the militia shoot once, shoot twice, and then they run away. But they don't really run away. They run in a big circle. Well, behind the militia are these Continental soldiers who act like they're going to run away. Then they stop, turn on their heels, level their rifles, and at point blank range, they shoot and kill several hundred of the British, and the ones that ran away come around the other side, and then the 800 of the British throw down their weapons, and the Colonel Tarleton, known as the Butcher, he rides away, and when word gets to Lord Cornwallis that his soldiers were killed and captured, he was leaning on his sword. He leaned so hard that the sword broke in half. He chases the Americans. The Americans cross the Catawba River. Before the British can cross, there's a flash flood, and they're delayed. And then the Americans cross the Yadkin River. The British come, and then they cross, but before they can cross another flash flood, they're delayed. And then they get to the Dan River. The Americans cross, the British show up, but before the British can cross, another flash flood, and they're delayed. And so three rivers rose in 10 days to save the Americans. And the one British historian said, here, the Royal Army was again stopped by a sudden rise of the waters, which had only just fallen almost miraculously to let the enemy over, who could not else have eluded Lord Cornwallis's grasp, so close was he upon their rear. So these are miracles in American history, that three rivers would rise just in time to stop the British. Fascinating stories. They're all in the books, Miracles in American History, and it's just a perfect gift for this part of the year, July 4th, Independence Day.
Yes, it is. And Bill, we thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for the hard work that you have put into these volumes, and not just these two volumes, but numerous other books that you have done. And we look forward to joining with you again soon. Thank you so much for helping us to understand the hand of providence. You know, as you were explaining all these things, the thought kept rolling through my mind. It just so happened. It just so happened. It just so happened. No, we see the hand of God moving upon the establishment of our country. And we're praying for the United States of America to turn to God, to understand where we have fallen from and where we can go. Thank you again for your time today. Thank you for joining us, friends. These books that he's mentioned are available at swrc.com or by giving us a call, 1-800-652-1144. Until next time, we Look forward to being with you again soon, Bill, and thank you again for your time on Watchmen on the Wall today.
God bless.
We have so many wonderful resources from today's guest, historian Bill Federer. Learn about America's godly heritage. Explore the faith of our presidents. Make sure you order Bill Federer's books when you visit our website, swrc.com, or when you call 1-800-652-1144. Friends, this daily program is only one of the ways that we share the good news. We have our monthly publications, The Prophetic Observer, and The Prophecy in the News magazine. We also have our weekly video podcast, Moment of Prophecy and Biblically Grounded, and the relaunch of the Prophecy in the News television program, now airing each week nationwide. This Christ-centered content is only available because of your prayers and financial gifts. Every gift makes a difference. Please visit swrc.com today and share a gift. You can also call 1-800-652-1144. Friends, your gift today will have an eternal impact. I want to personally invite you to join us for a life-changing pilgrimage to Israel with Southwest Radio Ministries host Dr. Larry Spargimino and Josh Davis. Explore ancient Jerusalem, worship at the Mount of Olives, and reflect by the Sea of Galilee. A transformative journey of faith awaits November 9th through the 20th. Get all the details when you visit swrc.com and click on the Israel Tour banner on the top of the homepage, or call 1-800-652-1144. Spaces are limited, so make sure you reserve your spot today. swrc.com, click on the Israel Tour banner, or simply call 1-800-652-1144. Come join Dr. Larry Spargimino and Josh Davis in Israel. Don't miss out on any of the important topics and information that is shared on Watchmen on the Wall. Make sure you subscribe to our free email newsletter, the latest insight and analysis from our speakers, and access to the latest resources. Sign up today for the free email newsletter, swrc.com, or give us a call, 1-800-652-1144. Tomorrow, we celebrate Independence Day with some help from John Wayne. Be sure to tune in by subscribing to our daily Watchmen on the Wall podcast. Watchmen on the Wall is a production of Southwest Radio Ministries and is supported by faithful listeners like you. Visit swrc.com to learn more. That's swrc.com.